This is Sovereign Debt, a podcast on greening the global economy and debt sustainability. I'm your host, Jill Doshi. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Sovereign Debt. Today, we're going to try something new. We thought it would be a great idea to introduce some others from Potomac Group. And today, I'm thrilled that Matt Vedola is here with us. Matt is a veteran investor in emerging market sovereign debt and joined Potomac Group last year, bringing a wealth of insight of the capital markets to our group. So Matt, thank you so much for being here.
Of course, happy to be. This is very exciting.
So first of all, Matt, can you give us a brief intro to your background as an investor and why did you want to switch over to the advisory side?
Sure. So I started my career in finance. I've spent about 17 years in the capital markets. I started on the sell side with roles at Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs. And then I moved over to the buy side to an investing role at a global credit asset manager called Brigade Capital, where I spent 9 years. And then most recently, I spent about 3 years at Citadel. And in those buy side roles, I was focused on investing in emerging market sovereign debt globally, and particularly in the high yield segments of the markets and looking at debt distress situations. Being a creditor and an investor does entail a lot of opportunities to engage with governments and provide feedback on debt capital markets transactions and even sometimes policy. And, you know, I really enjoyed that aspect of the role. And I thought the opportunity to be more directly engaged with governments would be particularly interesting given my background. And I thought it, you know, could be very helpful for sovereign governments and DMOs to really better understand how the market would react and sort of price in their, you know, policy decisions and capital markets transactions.
No, that's great. And we're super happy that you've made that switch to the advisory side. But now let's turn to those markets. Can you just give us a broad understanding? Again, we have a very wide audience here with lots of different skill sets. Some are in the market, some are not. Can you just kind of set the stage a little bit? What do you mean by the sovereign debt markets?
You know, as advisors to sovereign governments in matters related to their balance sheets, we really focus our attention on the market of sovereign debt issued in U.S. dollars and hard currency, euros, et cetera, and governed by external laws, typically New York and English law. And we have a particular focus on the emerging market segment, emerging market economy segment of those debt issuers. You know, at Potomac Group, we have expertise in situations where sovereign debtors have run into financing difficulties. Where their bond yields are maybe, you know, particularly high or their debt levels have become too burdensome and require some support from financial advisors. More recently, you know, in my role, you know, Potomac Group has a real expertise in matters related to green and blue financing, which is sort of a sub-market of the broader emerging market sovereign debt market. And we're really focused on developments in that space that are particularly relevant for EM sovereign issuers.
As we've been talking about on this podcast, just all the various innovations that are happening in that sphere, and we'll touch on that later. But first, I want to take the opportunity. Maybe we can just, it's not quite the new year now. I guess we're already kind of in February. But can you, just looking backwards a little bit, just give us a little quick year in review of what happened in 2021? In the markets? Just what were the big takeaways?
Yeah, absolutely. 2021 was a pretty challenging year for the sort of emerging market asset class, and particularly in sovereign debts. You know, governments were still recovering from the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, both in terms of fiscal and monetary support. And you had, you know, nominal GDP levels, you know, still below 2019. If you look at the kind of the benchmark index, which is the JP Morgan MB index, looking at that subset of countries, debt levels were actually, you know, 7 or 8% higher in GDP terms at the end of 2021 than at the end of 2019. And so now you have a situation where a lot of sovereign governments have, you know, near record high debt levels. only 42% of the index now has sovereign debt levels below 60%, and about a third or actually above 80% of GDP. So we started the year with spread levels, you know, the credit spread of 350, and ended 2021 about 20 basis points wider, so at around 370. And so you had a total return for that asset class of down 2 to 2.5%, which, you know, compared to some of the larger global asset classes out there, was a really poor performance. You know, commodities across the complex were up, you know, 40% with oil and natural gas, you know, up even higher. The S&P 500 in the United States was up 26%, and broader gauges of developed market equities were up over 20%. And high yield, U.S. high yield credit, which is a comparable for emerging markets, was up, you know, 4% for the year. So EM, you know, really, really sort of lagged from an asset class perspective in 2021. I would say a few of the key themes. One, you know, we're still grappling with today, which is rising inflation. So, you know, inflation across a lot of the EM marketplace put pressure on central banks to raise rates. You know, that became a big focus in for the US Fed as well. And we've seen that over the last month, particularly. Balance of payments dynamics in 2021 were challenging for a lot of emerging market countries. Oil importers faced pressure from rising prices. Tourism dollars continued to lag in a lot of regions, which are big inflows, you know, offset a little bit by high remittance flows, which continue to be at, you know, sort of record highs. And then you had a number of sort of idiosyncratic political events in some of the bigger economies that, you know, created a lot of volatility, some positive, some very negative. So, you know, if you look out at the landscape of kind of winners and losers from an asset return perspective, you know, Turkey, you saw continued very unorthodox economic policy making by the Turkish government, and a really poor performance for the currency there. El Salvador, you had, you know, also very unorthodox policymaking. And so those were two that, you know, really stood out as having tough 2021s. On the positive side, in Ecuador, you had a very positive election from a markets perspective. Guillermo Lasso was elected. Zambia as well, also a very market positive election. And Angola was one of the stronger currencies, and oil recovery helped significantly. One, you know, sort of other bright spot to highlight, which has been touched on this podcast, was the Belize restructuring, which was a really, you know, sort of novel and successful debt restructuring in 2021 that was obviously focused on green and blue. And Jill's obviously very familiar with how that played out.
Basically, if I can kind of just take a moment to kind of recap a little bit of what you were just saying, because there was a lot in there. You still have countries in emerging markets really struggling with recovery of the pandemic and still kind of facing this kind of rising interest rate kind of environment. But you have the equity markets and the kind of advanced economies kind of pulling ahead. So that's why we keep hearing from the IMF and just everyone about this kind of two-track recovery, right? That's kind of
exactly
what you were just describing.
Risk sentiment in the developed markets was very strong in 2021. You know, highlighted by, you know,
things are going to get better. The pandemic's behind us. We have vaccines and things just kind of recovered.
Exactly. And broader EM, you know, the vaccine story is very different. The growth recovery story is very different. And the fiscal, you know, trajectories from, we're still recovering from the pandemic, have made it really challenging for a lot of emerging market sovereign governments.
Right. And so those governments that might have, you know, more kind of oil economies or commodity-based economies might have had an easier time recovering, but the rest of them are still kind of struggling. And then we have these kind of creative solutions like Belize of just kind of trying to figure something else out.
Yeah, it was an interesting, you know, typically with really strong commodity performance, you know, emerging markets historically have done very well. And, you know, it's been very supportive for currencies in EM, et cetera. 2021 is actually a little different. A lot of the commodities like copper were really strong, and then you still had countries like Chile and Peru, you know, sort of, you know, struggle. Their currencies, you know, very, very weak. Brazil is another great example. So it was a challenging year, even in ways that, you know, historically you would have predicted. maybe a strong year for some of the EM countries. And a lot of that has to do with the lingering fiscal and other impacts from the pandemic.
So then when we look forward to kind of 2022, for these countries that are still kind of struggling, and now maybe some of the automatic relief, debt relief and programs and things that were put in place, kind of the band-aids, the kind of kicking the can, temporary solutions are maybe starting to run out. What do you see looking forward in the markets? And I know that's always harder to do, but not to put you on the spot, but what do you see going forward as the major themes and challenges?
In my mind, there's kind of, four or five really critical themes. And so starting kind of from the more specific, we saw a lot of, political issues related to elections in 2021. Those are, pretty common in EM to be volatile market events. In 2022, we have two really critical elections. First one in Colombia, which is in May. And in Brazil in October, and these are similarly to some of the other elections we've seen in South America, really setting up to be potentially very sort of binary market outcomes with far kind of left and right political forces aligning. So that's kind of one. Two, the debt service suspension initiative, which rolls off in 2022, and so there will be a sudden new need for debt service from a lot of the countries that were able to access that that suspension, and that could be a pretty painful sort of process for those countries that suddenly now have debt service coming due that they did not have over the last 2 years. China, is always incredibly relevant for emerging markets, but I think this year in particular, we're going to see, with some of the restructuring or issues in Zambia and other places, we're going to see China's role in bilateral lending, particularly in Africa, become really front and center under the spotlight, even further than it's been. And then separately, China is kind of has sort of a diverging policy platform for 2022, it seems like, where many of the countries are kind of pulling back on some of the fiscal and monetary support. China may likely be kind of doing the opposite. We've seen a lot of volatility in their property sector and some restructurings in some of these huge property companies. And so the Chinese are likely to be very supportive to their domestic financial markets. They've lowered rates when everyone else is raising rates already. So China, from a number of different directions, is going to be a really big focus for the year. Obviously, all things related to COVID-19 and the pandemic are still a focus, whether that's continued vaccine efforts or new variants or whatever the case may be. That's obviously front and center for the year and a big question mark. And then the other sort of obvious point is rising rates, right? And that's both true of emerging market governments who are forced to raise rates given inflation, and also the Fed in the U.S. And we've seen, we're a month into the year and we've already seen a pretty dramatic, moves in financial markets driven by this rate story. It's really rattled, global risk sentiment, particularly in tech and higher growth stories, but also kind of across the board. Year to date, the MB index that I referenced earlier is actually down 3% already.
And that's really from this rate story, from Powell's comments and just anticipation of what the Fed's going to do. That has that knock-on effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. The market was kind of unprepared for this hawkish a turn from the Fed. Inflation continues to be at the highs. I think, it is likely to remain at the highs in this first quarter of this year. The rapidly rising borrowing costs in dollars have an obvious knock-on effect to governments that are borrowing internationally in dollars, and particularly in the single B or the sort of lower quality rated sovereign world, it's going to be very challenging. 2022 is going to be very challenging for these governments that have relied on bond markets to help with their gross financing needs. Suddenly, when you have U.S. Treasuries, increasing by 80 basis points and or even, you know, 4% throughout the year, it really, really makes access to those at reasonable rates very, very challenging. And so I think that's a key focus for us this year, and may require some of these governments who in the past have just been able to kind of do regular way issuance to come up with more creative solutions that involve potentially, you know, multilateral support or other efforts.
Yeah, because over last year, there was still quite a lot of bond issuance coming out of, as you say, lower rated or lower income countries. What you're saying is that might actually become harder, or they might lose market access?
Absolutely. I think that's unfortunately going to be a big focus for the year and a challenge for those countries. And yes, as you said, last year was different. You know, rates were lower, and there was, I think more appetite for that risk, but we'll see how this year progresses.
What can they do in those situations? Like if the markets, if they've been relying on those bond markets and things start getting more expensive, do they just turn to bilateral partners? Do they just call in friends and family, other nations? Or is it a kind of a given that they have to then call in the IMF and restructure their debt?
I think it's a combination of things. One is, it may require policies that are sort of market friendly. And at times those can be very painful politically and socially for governments to enact. But, bringing down their cost of borrowing, you could see governments turn to, more sort of market friendly policies. Also, the IMF may play an even bigger role. The IMF and others may play an even bigger role in supporting some of these countries that have, suddenly found themselves, borrowing at 10%+ or locked out of markets. And we may see that, there's a number of countries that sort of are at risk of that being their only source of dollar funding for in the near term. So I think it'll be a big challenge for those countries.
And then if we kind of weave in, you mentioned earlier you mentioned the Belize transaction, but also just green and blue and other sustainable financing. When we kind of think of these countries that are facing these challenges, they're also often the same countries that are stewards of some of the biggest ecosystems that the whole planet needs to protect, but they don't have the fiscal space or the resources to do it. And even if they have put the legislation, even if they have the political will to protect these, they might not have the financial resources to, police those or kind of really execute those plans. So what are the kind of creative solutions that are going on in the markets right now to try to mobilize that capital in these challenging market environments to these countries that need it?
Yes, agree. I think this is likely to be a really interesting kind of aspect of the emerging market sovereign debt space for 2022. I think the pandemic's really been a big inflection point for multilateral and donor agencies who want to find ways to help emerging market countries, the vulnerable countries, as you said, address these dual problems of being over-levered and having too much debt, but also having, significant climate vulnerability and without the resources or the fiscal space to support and put in policies to help that. The goal, I think, is to simultaneously incentivize sovereign governments to achieve, environmental and sustainability targets, but also mobilize private capital markets to invest alongside of the donors and multilaterals. And I think we could see an emergence of a lot of sort of interesting financial tools used to achieve both those goals. You're seeing in the corporate markets, particularly in Europe, a rise in, and obviously in green and blue bond issuance, but also sort of more creative structures like sustainability linked bonds and others. And I think 2022 will be the year we start to see those financial technologies, enter the sovereign market and potentially even involve, you know, credit enhancement or other forms of support from the donor and multilateral community.
And when you say green and blue bonds, you're really, really referring to the kind of use of proceeds bonds. That's kind of project finance, right?
Yes.
I'm borrowing whatever, hundreds of millions of dollars, and I'm going to build the solar parks, or I'm going to, you know, kind of work on a very specific project. But these sustainability linked bonds are different, right? Those are the ones that are actually linked to some sort of performance.
Exactly. Yeah. We, you know, we've seen plenty of sort of green and blue use of proceeds, as you said, bond issuance from sovereigns. We have not yet seen sustainability linked bonds, which have, you know, very specific targets that need to be met in order for the sovereign to receive, you know, sort of financial benefit from that bond, where these bonds are also free and clear from a use of proceeds perspective. And I suspect those will pick up in issuance, and that the market will appreciate the, you know, more the more sort of defined structure of the bond, whereas a green and blue bond is use of proceeds, and you know, it's difficult to kind of track where those proceeds are going and how they, you know, there's a concern around greenwashing, et cetera. I think sustainability linked bonds, the sort of credibility behind them is much higher. And I think the markets will really appreciate that that structure in sovereigns.
And the thought is that maybe there's a way to also weave in some sort of, as you say, kind of credit enhancement or support from the IFIs. Or just generally, not even the IFIs, it could just be any sort of donor support.
Absolutely. I think so. I mean, to the point we discussed earlier, where there's, you know, suddenly, you know, single B issuers that need, you know, access to dollars and are no longer able to borrow in sort of the regular way, this type of a bond structure that has, you know, a collateral or some sort of credit guarantee or partial guarantee, et cetera, could be a really useful way to help those countries access dollars with private capital market investment as well, but obviously needing to pledge to support their, you know, environmental efforts.
And do you think, I mean, as you're from your background as an investor, do you think investors are genuinely interested in all of this, or are they just looking for the next kind of trendy thing?
I think there's a lot of interest. Obviously, the amount of ESG capital has grown massively, and so their investor base is focused on it. And I think there's a strong desire to find, particularly in the emerging market sovereign space, there's a strong desire to find solutions to this dual problem of climate vulnerability and debt. And I think these types of instruments could be particularly helpful there, and the markets will be very supportive of them when and if we start to see them issued.
I like to give the guest the last word. And usually I ask about what would you say to debt managers in these countries? What are the kind of advice that you'd like to give them, or kind of a heads up, or what should they be thinking about as they look forward? And I want to give you that last word.
Yeah, I appreciate it. As we said earlier, I expect 2022 to be a pretty challenging one for sovereign government debt, and particularly again in that high yield segment of the market. This tailwind of high commodity prices is likely to fade, and this headwind of rising yields. So we've already seen a lot of volatility in risk markets to start the year. And I think that is a signal that it's likely to be challenging for governments to issue the sort of regular way bonds that they've relied on in the past. They're going to be, you know, both expensive and challenging to get done. So I think it's really more important than ever for governments to hire, you know, independent financial advisors like Potomac Group to assist in achieving the best outcomes for their DMO teams and their balance sheets. This may include access to concessional lending, creative structured instruments around climate nature, like we were discussing, or even just sort of ratings, advisory, and capacity building, you know, to really help lower credit spreads and improve outcomes in debt markets.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Matt, I think this has been helpful, and I hope we can make this kind of a regular thing that you can come on and give us a little market overview, because I think it's incredibly helpful. I know we talk about it all the time, but I think it'd be nice if we can share it with our listeners. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I look forward to being on in the future.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, leave us a review and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.